Welcome to the home of Blood, Sweat, and Words, a podcast that empowers writers. My name is Joanne Carson. I'm a fiction and nonfiction author, blogger, and podcaster, and I'm trying to make sense of the writing world today. My weekly show is current, relevant, and above all, honest. Join me, and we'll talk it to the bone. That's what Blood, Sweat, and Words is all about. Welcome to episode 23. I had the honor today of talking with Angela Ackerman, a titan in the world of writing. Angela is a writing coach, international speaker, a co-author of the best-selling book, The Emotion Thesaurus, A Writer's Guide to Character Expression, as well as six other books in the popular series. Her books are available in six languages, are sourced by U.S. universities, used by novelists, screenwriters, editors, and psychologists around the world. Angela is also the co-founder of the popular site Writers Helping Writers, as well as One Stop for Writers, an innovative online library packed with custom-made tools and resources built to help writers elevate their storytelling. And I'm hoping to talk about a little bit about all of that today. Oh my gosh, there's so much to talk about. I'll start with a few questions. Your thesauruses are an amazing resource for writers, Angela. I have four of them that have coffee stains, folded corners, multi-colored sticky notes sticking out of them. How many thesauruses have you written?
Well, first of all, I'm really glad to hear that there are lots of sticky notes and folded corners and coffee stains, because that tells me you're actually using them,
which
is great. That's what we love to hear. So please keep you know, loving
Mangling
those
them?
Books. Yes, exactly. So we have written seven books altogether. Our seventh book is a second edition of The Emotion Thesaurus, A Writer's Guide to Character Expression, which is the first book we wrote.
Right.
Then we also have e-booklet that some people know about and some don't. It's called Emotion Amplifiers, and it's not in print, it's only in ebook, and it's just a short little thing. It basically dovetails with what we teach in the Emotion Thesaurus. There's a lot of we call them states of being that a lot of people mistake as emotions, but they're not emotions. They're actually a condition that amplifies a character's emotional state. So we just kind of created a special little guide for those type of things like boredom, pain, illness, stress, things like that, that will, you know, kind of amp your characters, whatever emotional state they're in. It's going to make it more elevated, and they're going to be more likely to make mistakes or miss, you know, not notice something or something that's going to create conflict.
These are incredibly comprehensive volumes. Do you have a favorite?
Oh, man, that's kind of like, I don't know, asking someone who's their favorite child is.
True enough. I
guess I would have to say probably The Emotion Thesaurus, only because it's the very first one that we wrote, and it kind of started this whole phenomenon for us where people just really understood what we were trying to do and found the type of guides that we write very helpful. So, I mean, I think all the books are excellent. I'm especially proud, I think, of The Emotional Wound Thesaurus, because that was a very difficult topic to tackle and really forced us to dig deep. But it's a really important area, and it's something that all storytellers kind of need to understand so that they can really dig down to why their characters are motivated the way they are and what sort of things in the past are you know, causing problems in their lives, which is story. You know, they're trying to get from A to B, and they're having trouble getting to B, and the reason why is usually something that has happened in their past. So understanding what that is quite important. But yeah, I would say it was probably The Emotion Thesaurus, just because it started everything for us.
That's so true. I think I see people as we're all broken, and it's where we're broken and how we're broken. And for storytellers, that becomes a rich source of conflict. So I love your Emotion Thesaurus. It's the first one I had, and it's well used. And now you've written a second edition. Do you want to tell us about the second edition?
Yeah, the second edition, it's something that we've wanted to do for a long time. Beck and I have learned so much since we started creating these thesauruses. And the Emotion Thesaurus originally came out in 2012. So it's been a long time. We've learned a lot in that time. And the most common piece of feedback that we get from our readers is, I love this. I don't know how I wrote without it, but I wish it had more emotions. So Beck and I finally decided this past year that we were going to work on this as a secret project, not tell anyone, and add 55 new emotions to it. So that's what we've done. There's also some new teaching content because, as I said, you know, as you learn more about writing, you grow, your knowledge grows. And so we could see some gaps that was in the first volume, things that we wanted to talk more about, like subtext and dialogue and how emotion fits into those things, and a few different areas like those that will help writers just create a more compelling experience for their readers, because they're going to understand emotion in how it can be used in different situations and how to go a little bit deeper with it.
Well, how does that work? Do you and Becca work on each emotion together, or do you take different emotions and compile it?
It's a good question. Becca and I are very, I think because we've worked on so many books together, we mesh really well. So how we start the process is we basically divvy everything up. We decide what it is that we're going to write. So in the case of emotion entries or setting entries or personality traits, we each take, you know, we create our list, we create the format that we're going to use, and then we split the list in half and we each write half, and then we swap. And we add whatever from our perspective, you know, that we feel was missed. We'll add that to the entry, and then, you know, we go through the editing process together. And then as far as the teaching content that comes before the thesaurus in every one of our books, we do the same thing. We create the outline together. We decide, like, what areas do we really want to touch on? What's kind of the word count buffer that we've got? You know, how many pages do we have to write these sections? And then we split it up. We each do half. We switch. We add our own flavor, our own ideas, things that maybe we want to elaborate on that can piggyback onto things that we had written on, in our own sections, and just kind of mesh it all together. Sometimes there's overlap. Becca and I will touch on the same topic just under different headings. You know, if I'm talking about hidden emotion under my heading, where I'm talking about how a character might show these things when they're trying to hide their emotions from everyone else around them, maybe because they're scared or they're in danger or something like that, it might overlap into something that she's discussed under a section under subtext. And then we have to make decisions about where it fits better and then move it to that section. But we make several passes doing that. And I think our skills are very complementary. So at the very end of the day, it would be difficult to say, oh, okay, yeah, Angela wrote this entry and Becca wrote that entry. I don't think a person would be able to tell whose is who.
No, I hear one voice, which is pretty amazing. And it's a very strong voice and a very clear voice. So you both do all the research as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it depends on the topic. Some topics require a lot more, like emotional wounds, you know, take a ton of research. And settings, we actually visited most of the settings that are in the book. So either Becca or I visited them. There was a few where we couldn't because they were difficult to access. Like there was one for a psychiatric ward. It's kind of hard to get in one of those, you know, just like, hey, can I take a tour? They just don't typically let you do that. But, you know, we did a lot of research and we were able to find out what it looked like inside. We even found a video that someone had taken. They had hidden a video camera, which they weren't allowed to have. They were a patient in one of the wards, and they had kind of hidden a video camera, and they went around and took a video of everything. So that was very, very helpful. It showed us lots of detail that we may have not known ourselves, like how in the bathrooms they're designed in a way where you can't harm yourself. So things like, you might assume that it would be like a hospital, you know, there'd be a showerhead, but the showerheads are actually recessed. You can't manipulate them, you can't tie anything around them. So things like that, you know, just the way systems work with doors locking and visibility and, you know, that kind of stuff, it was very helpful to find that kind of detail from someone who was actually in one of those hospitals.
And so, it's so helpful for writers, because I'm not going to leave my home and go find that setting very easily. And you've done it all. You've done all that footwork.
Well, we've done a lot of the footwork. We always encourage people, especially if you're writing a setting in a very specific location, to do a bit of your own research, because our entries are obviously generalized to a certain degree. You know, if you take a forest setting, a lot of it is going to be similar, but there's going to be different, you know, flowers, different types of animals, and, you know, different things that are going to be in a particular setting if it takes place, you know, in Nevada versus Colorado or Canada or Australia, or, you know, like there's it, depending on where you are and where something is located, there's going to be some differences. So it's always good to think about that.
So you have a long list of writing tools available on your Writing Helper Writers website. And I'll put a link in the show notes. Did you want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, Becca and I, you know, we love books. And we love creating these thesauruses because, in essence, they're kind of part guide, part writing tool. They bridge the gap for writers between, you know, the typical how-to book on something and then actually sitting in front of your computer and trying to figure out what to write. It acts as a really strong brainstorming tool to kind of kickstart your brain as to what it is that you can do. And we are very visual people, Becca and I, and the tools that we've kind of created are just side tools that will help writers sort of break down more difficult concepts in a visual way. So a lot of them are from different books that we've written. I think every single book except for the Emotion Thesaurus has an appendix where we share several of these different tools. And so on the Tool for Writers page, we provided all those tools so that people can print out blanks and as many as they want. They can print these tools out and fill them in for their characters to kind of get a better idea of, say, you know, what their different flaws look like and how those are going to play out in the character's personality and how certain ones are going to cause more friction than others because they are more prominent, things like that. Or if you want to look at your backstory, your character's backstory, this can be a problematic area for writers. They don't even know where to start. So we offer something called the reverse backstory tool, where we actually take a backward approach and we look at the problems the character is having, certain flaws that show up in their personality. And from these things, you can start building the character's personality or their backstory and the deep wounds that they're holding that are going to factor into the storytelling. So it's just a more visual way to kind of break down some of the more difficult things, brainstorming areas that writers might have when they're planning their characters or planning their stories.
And what about the One Stop for Writers?
One Stop for Writers is kind of an eye on steroids. That's what I call it. because we really, like I said, our brains kind of work in a way where, you know, we're writers. We know what we need, what would be really awesome if this tool existed that could help us. And, you know, while we love books, books are also limited by page count. There's only certain things that you can do within that format. So we wanted something where we could branch out a little bit. And so we partnered with Lee Powell, who is the creator of Scrivener for Windows and Linux. Oh. And we got together and all of us are writers. We all kind of have the same mindset. We love helping other writers. We are very creatively driven. We love building tools. We love building things that are going to help writers and help make the writing process easier. So together, I mean, you know, we sort of take the storytelling ideas that Beck and I have and use the creative genius and the developing genius of Lee Powell, and we come up with these great tools, you know, how we're envisioning how they can work, and Lee makes them, you know, turns them into a real thing, and it's really fantastic. So we have, of course, all our thesauruses are at One Stop for Writers. A lot of people only know about the books, but we actually have 14, working on 15 different thesauruses. It's just not all of them have been turned into books, and not all of them will ever be books, because some of the topics just, they're more narrow, or they would become a booklet, not a book. So we put them all on One Stop for Writers, because I think, again, the more books we write, the more we realize, you know, these are heavy books and people love them in print. And I totally understand that it's nice to flip through them to see the whole entry at once. Kindle can be a little bit difficult because you got to scroll screen to screen to screen. So we thought it would be really great to have all of these things in one place. So if I'm looking up an emotion and then that gives me an idea for a possible emotional wound or a character trait, I can just go to that thesaurus. I don't have to pick another book off my shelf. And so that's what we've done at One Stop, is all of the thesauruses are available there. So there's weather and symbolism. There's character physical features if you're describing your character. There's the setting, there's personality traits, emotions, emotional wounds, emotional amplifiers. Ugh, and I know I'm missing some there, but all these different topics, it's all there in one place, kind of like this tool that you can keep with you as you're writing. But that's only one feature of One Stop. You know, I think where it really shines, in my opinion, is not the thesaurus at all. It's how we're using the thesaurus. And that's something that we're going to, people are going to discover soon here. We built a character building tool that's in beta testing right now. So it should release soon. I'm hoping early February. But it's the first tool that we've built where it actually pulls data from all the different thesaurus databases that we have.
So you're
building your character and you're picking their wound, and it goes right to the wound thesaurus, and you can pick the exact wound that you want. You can adapt it. You can make your own wound if you don't find something that you like. And it sources all of this information, the character's wounds, their needs, their character motivation, their personality traits, and it weaves it all together to build a character arc blueprint, which will, depending on the information you've chosen, it will actually show you what your arc, your character arc blueprint will look like. And you can change it from a change arc to a failed arc if you decide, no, I'm going to write a tragedy. I want to see what happens to this character based on all the information I put in. What does a failed arc look like? It'll show you. If you want to have a story that's more action-based and it's more of a static arc, you can see what that looks like. So as far as I know, I've never heard of anything like this being built. And I think we're only able to do it because we have all these databases of incredible, deep characterization thesauruses.
You did all that work. It's so neat to have that for to stand on. That's incredible.
Well, it helps, right? Because there's so many moving pieces to a strong character, and there's so many moving pieces to a strong story. And so we're building the tools at One Stop for Writers that brings that all together. We have a lot of structure tools there too, like the story map, which structure is something that, you know, it mystifies a lot of people. They struggle with it. There's so many different types, you know, do I save the cat or do I use Michael Haig's six-stage structure? Do I use the character or the hero's journey? And there's so many different structure models, and it can be very confusing. And so we've tried to make it as easy as possible and give you step-by-step help to help you plan your story using this map. And then we do it at the scene level too, where you can plan each scene and think about all the important pieces that need to be there for a scene to really earn its place within the story. And so we're building these kind of tools that hopefully will really help writers and just, you know, make the certain pieces of storytelling easier that we can, so that, you know, it makes that it a little bit easier for them as they're crafting their story, and they have a stronger story and stronger characters that are very well fleshed out that readers are really going to find memorable and connect to.
It sounds amazing. It's almost like AI. I mean, you're on the cutting edge of storytelling by creating databases and then a program that can pull on them. That is amazing.
It's very fun, and I think it's a great direction where we're heading. We're very excited to see what else we can do with all the information that we have at our disposal, because we've created over years and years and years of time. It's great. And I mean, we'd never be able to do this without, you know, Lee Powell, and we have another developer named Abhishek, who have just been amazing on developing this, just creating it and making it into a real thing. And it's really interesting to watch as a writer, because, you know, I have zero abilities in that department at all, and just seeing all the work that goes into building something like this, it's incredible. And you really have you develop a big appreciation for computer programs and different apps and stuff like that, just because the amount of work is just unreal behind something like this.
It sounds amazing. So did you have some idea of when this character building tool will be available?
We're hoping it's in beta testing right now. We've got a select group of people who are going through it. They're creating characters. You know, if they find bugs, they'll let us know. If they find any areas where they're confused, they'll let us know. Because, I mean, this is it basically takes something that can be quite complex, because you're really digging deep into, you know, backstory of the character, you know, digging at their fears, their wounds, looking at what their fatal flaw is, all these different aspects that, you know, are, you need to know a specific level of knowledge to understand why they're important. And it kind of turns it into something that hopefully is easy. And a lot of that depends on how well we supported the tool with good instruction, with tutorials, with definitions for different terms and stuff like that. So that's the other thing we're hoping our beta testers are checking for, is just to kind of, you know, be our gut check as to, you know, how easy or hard is it to use this tool to understand what it is that you're supposed to do. And so depending on what they come back with, you know, we'll make our final adjustments and then launch it. But it's pretty polished. Like, I don't think that there's a lot of major work that still needs to be done. So I'm hoping by early February, within the first 2 weeks of February, I would hope we would be able to launch that to our users.
Oh, that is really soon. And so exciting. So you're a writer, you're a speaker, and this goes beyond all of that. It's sort of like a creator on a different level. What do you like doing best?
Good question. I think, honestly, I really enjoy building tools, whatever form they are, for writers, to help writers with that process. I also really enjoy the learning aspect, because as I go along, you know, I'm learning more and more all the time about different aspects of storytelling, about how things work, about how writers think. And I enjoy that aspect of it as well. I'm looking forward to the day when I can step back a little and get back into fiction myself, because in order for us to write all these thesauruses and to do this kind of, you know, high level software, it's definitely, you know, it's, and speaking too, it takes a lot of time. And so unfortunately, Beck and I have sort of put our own fiction aside for the interim while we're working on all of this stuff. But we're both looking forward to getting back to that, because it is an important, I mean, that's what drew us to this in the first place. This was kind of an accidental career, I guess, in that we were having a problem, you know, with description and especially emotion. And we decided, well, let's start creating these lists, and that will help us better understand what our character's body language should look like and what thought processes they have when they're feeling a specific emotion, and what the different visceral sensations they might feel, you know, when they're in that, feeling that emotion. And that's kind of what started us all, was just a need for our own characters to kind of get past the reusing the same sort of description over and over. We were trying to write fresher. And so, you know, we do want to get back to that and write our fiction. So hopefully we'll find a way to balance the two.
Oh, it's hard to find that balance when you're doing such incredible work.
Oh, well, thank you.
I'm over the moon excited here. There's so much to look at. I noticed on your website you also give some profits to charity. Which charity are you supporting?
We actually choose a different one every year. So Beck and I just take turns, and we choose who we want to donate to that year, whatever cause is kind of really close to our heart. This last year we donated $1,000 to Doctors Without Borders. Wow. I think the year before that it was $1,000 to Room to Read, which focuses on literacy. So we've done a lot of different charities. We've done stuff with refugees. It's their year to choose. They kind of put up two or three different choices, and then the other person weighs in on which one they would like to see. And that's kind of how we always make our decisions together, Becca and I. So that's kind of how it works.
It sounds like a great friendship.
Yeah. It's very good friendship. And it's ironic that, you know, we live in different countries. Our relationship is 99% online. Beck and I have only met in person 3 times.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, and those 3 times were all very short. The longest time I think I saw her for was maybe 48 hours. She came to Calgary. Her and I were doing a workshop together. So she literally flew in, we did the workshop, and then she flew out. So, we have not spent a lot of time on the ground together, but, you know, we just have developed such a great friendship. And that's, you know, that's a good takeaway for any writer, that, you know, we live in an incredible age right now where you can connect with people online and you can build incredible relationships with these people, whether or not they're your critique partners, whether or not they're your editor or agent or your readers. I mean, that's the wonderful thing as far as, building a readership and having to market yourself and things like that. Is at the heart of marketing, it's really just about building relationships with people and being yourself and being authentic. And so, you know, the fact that we have this incredible tool now that allows us to do it, that you know, we can build those readerships, and they don't have to be right here in our own town or in our own city or in our own province or, you know, state. They can be anywhere in the world. You can build readerships anywhere now, and it's just fantastic.
And while we're on that topic, do you have one key tip to give to writers?
If I were to give one blanket tip, it would just be to slow down and not be in a rush to publish. Because I think that that's probably the biggest mistake that I see a lot of writers make. They look around them and they look at their friends, their critique partners, their, you know, other writers that they know, and they see them publishing books. And this has happened a lot more, especially with self-publishing. It's become quite easy to do. And so there's this inner pressure that we have on ourselves, like, oh my gosh, I've got to put out a book too. I've got to publish this. I got to get this ready. I got to do it. Mm-hmm. But what we need to remember is that, you know, writing is something, it takes time to develop. Strong writing craft takes time. And we really want to honor our profession and our words and our readers by making sure that we're working really, really hard to develop our story craft before we rush ahead into publishing. It really isn't a race. It can feel like a race sometimes, but we need to step away from that part of ourselves that kind of pressures us into, you know, feeling like we need to do this before we're ready. And it's totally okay to take your time, you know, to learn that writing craft and to become a stronger writer before you start publishing books. So I think that would be my blanket piece of advice, is just to enjoy the process of learning and growing and not be so focused on the end result of publication.
I'm busy taking notes like crazy. it's really well said. Where can people find you and your books?
We're online a lot of different places. You can find us especially at writershelpingwriters.net, which is our website, and that's where our blog is. We have tons and tons of amazing content for writers there. We've been blogging now for well over 10 years. And so we've just, you know, we have a ton of different articles and guest coaches that will come in and share their knowledge as well. You can also find us at One Stop for Writers. That's the software that we have. It's a subscription site. You can register for free, and you can kind of poke around and see different free areas and get an idea if this is a tool that might help you or not. And you can also find us online. Beck and I are both on Facebook. We're both on Twitter. And, you know, we're on Goodreads. Our books are anywhere that you can buy books online: Amazon, Book Depository, IndieBound, Kobo, you name it. Wherever you can buy books, you can find our books. You can also grab our books through our site, find more about our books through our site if that's easier. And then you can always order our books in at a library or at a bookstore. You just need to give them the ISBN if they don't already have it listed, and they'll be able to bring it in for you.
And all those sites are listed in the show notes.
Perfect.
So what are you reading right now? Do you have time to read?
Oh, no kidding. I went to Mexico for a week, so I managed to knock through 4 different books, which was great. I read The Bestseller Code, I believe it's called. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting book on machine learning. Somebody created a product. They created a program that analyzes bestseller books to try to determine why they became a bestseller. And they basically fed a computer, you know, hundreds, thousands of different best-selling books. Mm-hmm. And the computer started putting pieces together. And based on the information that it was learning, you could put in another type of book, and it would give you a percentage as to whether or not it felt it would become a bestseller or not. And so it analyzed a lot of different bestsellers, a lot of work by Grisham. It looked at 50 Shades of Grey and kind of explained why that one became such... why it appealed to so many people, different themes that were present in different bestsellers.
So we read across genres then.
Yeah, it was quite amazing. So yeah, it's a good book, I think, for writers to pick up or grab from your library, because it really does give you some insight into some key things that you want to be thinking about for your book, that you want to make sure that that you've included them. You know, one is strong plotting. It looked at a lot of different plot structures that were successful. So, you know, if structure is something where you struggle a little bit or you're not sure what to do there, you know, they kind of go through different types of structure in different novels, how they don't have to all be the same, but they work because of these key things and they kind of go through why. Another thing was human connection is a big theme in books across the board. So if your book contains some sort of human connection, relationships, that sort of area, then that's another thing that needs to be present in best-selling books. So that was a really, that was a good eye-opening book. It was a Christmas gift, so I'm glad I read it.
I think it's awesome.
Yeah, it's a few years old, but the content is still relevant as far as I'm concerned. So yeah, that'd be a good one for readers to pick up.
Yeah, sounds good. And you also found a good drink while you were down there? Oh, no, it was an Italian drink.
Oh, yes. That was in Italy. You had asked for a cocktail. And so our favorite, my husband and I, our favorite go-to cocktail now is the Aperol Spritz. And it was, it's something that they drink all throughout Italy. In fact, as soon as we arrived, you know, right around noon, all the way through the evening, you would see people with these orange drinks. And ever down there, they all drink them in a wine glass. So it's very, you know, it's quite a noticeable drink. And right away, you're like, what is that that everyone's drinking? And it was an Aperol Spritz. And it's a little, it's kind of, it's almost like orange crush, only not as sweet and a little bit of a bitter aftertaste. So it's a very popular drink down there because it doesn't have a high alcohol content. And it's a very social culture. People are very social. They're always getting together and talking about stuff, and meals are very long events, you know, where you're visiting. Yeah, it is, right?
So
that was definitely, we brought that back with us, that drink. And so we make it quite often now.
That sounds great. I'll put that in the show notes too. I can't thank you enough for joining us today. I've learned so much. It'll take me quite a while to, you know, take it all apart and process it. It's just been great. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Stay tuned next week for my interview with Al Lane, who writes post-apocalyptic zombie poetry, among other things, and Mark O'Neill. Not only will we learn about their writing, but we'll also get a glimpse of what it's like to be an author in England and in Germany. On the home front, I'm writing every day. I'm nearing the end of the first draft in my novella, as yet unnamed, and I'm letting my podcast book steep. So in other words, I don't really have anything more to any big news to tell you. And that's a wrap for today. Thank you for listening to our episode today. You can leave me feedback on my podcast website, www.bloodsweatandwords.com, where you can also sign up for my newsletter. I wish you a wonderful day of writing or reading or whatever your passion is. See you between the lines.